Hello.
Hello.
I need some new headphones. I keep losing sound in the left ear. It doesn't matter how many times I wiggle the cord around. It just doesn't come back.
Yeah. I've had really good luck with, I got some, hashtag not sponsored. I got some from Red Dragon and I really like them. They're really comfy too.
Sounds like a sex thing.
I know. Every time I get an email, I'm like, did somebody sign me up for Bad Dragon? No. Red Dragon. The fucking company that I bought my, like, keyboard from and my headphones from and, like...
Is that a USB plug-in, though?
I think it had both. It has the option for both.
Because the Yeti needs the aux cord for me to hear myself.
Yeah, I think it has the option for both, but you'd have to look. Because I had a set... I just wanted the USB, so...
Yeah. I had a set that I, like, bought a adapter for, and it did not work. So, I was like, fuck. I'm probably gonna look on Unclaimed Baggage and see if they have any cheap ones on there.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
Yeah, it might be harder to find...
aux cord ones.
Yeah, because so many are gonna be wireless and Bluetooth and stuff now.
Yep, but I like hearing me in the microphone, so yeah. I know it is making sound.
My gardening stuff is doing well. We're learning a lot by trial and error.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
We haven't lost any major plants yet. We've lost some seedlings and stuff. We had a couple of our small pots that got blown over and just totally fucked the seedlings that weren't, like, even though I tried, they were just toast.
That's
Yeah, because they, like, fully dumped them over. So, one of them, like half of the seedlings have survived, the fenugreek, and then the other half have died. So I've just pulled out the ones that were dead so that they don't accidentally, like, absorb any of the nutrition. Because they're like flat to the dirt, wrinkling up. So I was like, probably dead. So that's fine.
Yeah.
And then the other, so round two of planting seedlings and stuff has gone pretty well. Our zinnias are all popping off. Our cilantro's going crazy.
That's good.
The other two herbs are trying, but the cilantro's really just like, hello, I am here, taking up half of this container now. What is?
It's alcohol.
Wine?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Nice mug.
Yeah, thanks. Ooh, that is sweet wine.
Blech. I'm a dry wine bitch.
Yeah, she needed it for a recipe, so we have extra.
Well, you'll need that for the story I'm about to tell you. Are you ready?
Yes.
Then let's get started.
That was a choice.
Welcome to The Strange and Unusual, where we discuss the strange and unusual. This is episode 186 of our series, seeking out the weird, the unexplained, and the devious from around the world. I'm Casey.
And I'm Roya.
What a pause. Dramatic effect.
No, you clicked out for me. So oh, okay.
Well,
in my ear, I said it right after you. So that's going to be great.
Today I'm going to be telling you about just another weird little guy and how he became the president of a whole nation.
Okay.
Y'all ready for this? Jackson, this is not the time. I know that you're excited about the music. You want to be involved in the space jam. It's okay. Uwebus. It's going to be a bummer, guys. Sorry. Suicide.
I mean, get it right out of the way.
Colonization and imperialism.
God damn it. Somehow sadder.
Brief mentions of alcoholism, Florida, and a mention of hurricane season. Nothing bad particularly happens in this story, but I know a lot of people have anxiety around natural disasters, especially when you've experienced one. I just wanted to make sure I mention it in case that's going to bother anybody.
Yeah, that's fair. Especially with all of the weird shit happening, right? East Coast having earthquakes and the West Coast having hurricanes. And
so, as always, picture it. Illinois, 1915.
I cannot. I guess Chicago. Yeah. All
Chicago.
Right.
Yeah. So It's a suburb of Chicago where they are. It's April 1st. And the hero of our story, Lester, was born to Grace Hall and Clarence Edmonds Hemingway. His parents.
Relation to.
Hold on. I'm telling you a story.
I'm sorry. I thought we were trying to ask more intuitive questions.
Ask those after this, because this is a lead up to what you're asking.
My sincerest apologies.
His parents were supporters of the arts and sciences, Grace had trained as an opera singer, and Clarence was a doctor, so that checks out. From everything I read about Grace, too, just like side note, she's kind of a bad bitch, and also just kind of a bitch. She should have her own story. Yeah. But Lester was the youngest of six children. He had four sisters, Marceline, Ursula, Madeline, and Carol, and an older brother named, yes, Ernest.
Huh.
You probably never heard of him.
No, never.
So Lester, the youngest child, admired his older brother, like aspired to be just like him when he grew up. He described his older brother as something of a father figure, which makes sense when you learn that Ernest was 16 years older than Lester.
Yeah, I mean, that's old enough to be his dad.
To be your dad, yeah. He changed his brother's diapers. He taught him how to fight, how to fish, how to shoot a gun. Like, all the boy things you need to know in 1915.
Well, and you have to kind of imagine that if he's 16 years older, then, like, the dad was probably either a really young dad to them or was really advanced in age.
The dad point. Was that hot dude I sent you earlier.
Oh.
Yeah, that's Clarence and Sarah and Grace. He doesn't look like he belongs in his time. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, he definitely looks like if I saw him like at a coffee shop, I would be like, brewery. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, he would fit right in.
Like, oh, yeah, there's that guy who'd be wearing a flannel.
Yep.
Probably suspenders.
So this father figure was something sorely needed, as Clarence wouldn't be around past Lester's formative years. Clarence's father had died a few years earlier. Ernest had brought shame to the family by getting his first of several divorces. His own health was deteriorating, and he made some bad investments that saw him owing more money on a home than the home was actually worth. And on the morning of December 6th, 1928, Clarence Hemingway took his own life.
Oh,
so,
womp womp.
Ernest came around.
Or did he return back to the future time period that he was originally from?
Yeah, right. So Ernest came back to arrange the funeral, and he made sure to tell his 13-year-old brother, Hemingway's, don't cry, which is a great thing to tell a child in mourning.
Yeah.
1900s, man. It was a crazy time.
Super healthy. Excellent coping mechanism.
Also, he apparently...
But there are people right now who are telling their sons, especially their sons, men don't cry, boys don't cry, you can't do that, don't cry, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, they're going to grow up to be...
I'll give you something to cry about.
They're going to grow up to be very, very emotionally stable, aware.
They're going to be fine.
They're going to know how to handle their anger.
God damn, I just realized I wore a pimple patch the entire time I was in dance. Anyway.
I'm sure they've seen weirder and worse.
I'm sure. Another thing that Ernest did at this time was he apparently asked Lester to get the gun that their father used and have it shipped to him.
All right. But
if you know anything about Ernest Hemingway's life, that's certainly not any kind of foreshadowing. But that did not diminish the heroic light with which he saw Ernest. And he also got into writing. He loved the outdoors. Everything Ernest was into, so was Lester. Like, he was that little gangster on the side in those old movies who's just saying, yeah, see, and like repeating what the bigger gangster says. That was Lester. While Lester was celebrating getting a spot on the school paper, which he thought was such a huge deal, Ernest was getting a movie deal for like A Farewell to Arms or something. So sorry, bro.
Well, I mean, again, 16-year age difference.
Yeah. Lester actually talked to Ernest about how he also wanted to go into writing. And while ultimately supportive, he was like, you know, I'll give you advice, but I'm not helping you. Because he didn't want anyone to suggest that Lester wasn't making his own way as a writer.
Yeah. He doesn't want his brother to be a nepo baby.
So while author. He said that, he also said, everything you do, they'll say you're writing on my reputation. You know that, don't you?
I mean, he's not
That's a
wrong,
quote.
Though.
That's a real quote, though. Still, the brothers remained close. In 1935, Lester started working for a newspaper on his brother's advice. World War II rolls around. Lester ends up going to Europe, but I couldn't find whether he was drafted or enlisted, only that he served in Europe in a documentary film unit.
Oh, and that's cool.
Then in 1953, he published his first novel, The Sound of the Trumpet, which was based on his experience in France and Germany during the war. Not unlike Ernest writing these semi-autobiographical A Farewell to Arms. And while The Sound of the Trumpet received some amount of praise, generally people thought the work was derivative and that he was, as Ernest suggested, riding the coattails of his brother. The New York Times even wrote in its review that Lester was, quote, part of the first younger generation shaped by the writings of Ernest Hemingway. In an article I saw about it on Grunge said that Ernest didn't hold back either, calling it a, quote, chicken shit abortion filled with the worst crap I've ever read. A few good parts were like ripe plums in vomit.
Wow.
I mean, ouch.
Yeah, it's one thing. Like, I get where Ernest is coming from, right?
Yeah.
Like, that would be the comparison. It's just like, you know, an actor, like a child going into acting is going to be compared to how their father acts.
Yeah, like a lot of people do with, I can't remember his name, Colin Hanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or there's a ton. The Tenants, you know, with his son going into acting now too. In
Goldie Hawn and Kate Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And there was another one I was just thinking of. Oh, I mean, not a certainly not a successful actress, but Francis Ford Coppola and then Sofia Coppola in directors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Bryce Dallas Howard. Like, there's a bunch that constantly get compared to relatives that are in the business as well, who came before them and were successful.
Yeah.
It's always a comparison like that. Christopher Tolkien and J.R.R. Tolkien. Like, there's a bunch.
Well, within the decade of this book's release, I don't know why I put a D on there, Ernest had become severely ill. He was depressed and paranoid to the point where he believed the FBI was actively monitoring his movements.
I mean, they might have been.
And in the early morning hours of July 2nd, 1961, Ernest Hemingway, like his father, took his own life.
Did he use the same gun?
He did not. He used a shotgun, okay. Which was written really weird. Like, people kept saying it was his favorite shotgun. And I was like, that's dark, man.
I mean,
me and old Betsy.
One yeah, more it was round. Like, it's my most reliable gun. Like, yeah. if I was ever gonna pick one gun to shoot last, that would be the one. I'm like, all right, that's kind of fair though.
So one of the things about Ernest that Lester says a lot in his book that I'm about to talk about was that he thinks that Ernest liked having a non-critical, like, hero worship person around. Like, he liked having a hype man, and that's why he and Lester got along so well, because Lester was that for him. He always wanted to have that little brother looking up to me sort of vibe, so he had several Lesters when Lester wasn't around. And he wanted this autobiography written, or this biography written about him, but he didn't want it to come out while he was still alive. So 8 months after Ernest died, Lester published this book, which was called My Brother, Ernest Hemingway. And weirdly, so in the book, he acknowledges this, but Mary, Ernest's fourth wife and widow, told the press Mr. Hemingway accidentally killed himself while cleaning a gun. And that was what was printed in the papers. But he also sort of like hints that there was like possibly intention, like maybe it was an accident, but, you know, that sort of thing. Because he writes a lot about Ernest's depression, his sadness, he was getting electroconvulsive therapy at the Mayo Clinic. Like, he was going through it.
Yeah, sounds like.
But this book was massively successful, and it still is a must read for Hemingway enthusiasts today. It was published as a serial at the time in Playboy magazine. Yeah, it's for reading. And
I mean, it certainly was at one point.
And the book was translated into 11 different languages. So Lester made a small fortune from the sales, which will be important later. And later is in about 30 seconds.
Well, and it's impressive, like, just the being translated into 11 languages, especially like for the time.
Yeah.
You know, that this is in 60s, 70s. And so to be translated into 11 languages really shows you the expanse of reach that Ernest Hemingway's writing had.
I don't know if all 11 languages were translated like immediately, or if it was like over this last century they have been translated, but
yeah,
it has been.
But regardless, I mean, that's a huge amount of...
That ain't nothing. So yeah, super successful. He made a small fortune. And what I was saying earlier was that writing wasn't his only love. He loved the ocean. He loved the islands. He was only 19 and they're living in Florida. He built his own boat and sailed to the island of Bimini in the Caribbean. He was just like, I'm 19. Deuces. Like, fucking
yeah,
life.
I mean.
So after the success of his brother's biography and Rich with Profit, he buys himself some steel, bamboo, iron piping, rocks, an old Ford engine block, and a couple bags of guano. You know what guano is?
Yeah.
It's like dried bird or bat feces used as fertilizer.
Yeah.
It was like the oil of the time. But he takes this haul to Jamaica, where he builds a raft roughly 8 feet by 30 feet. And by the way, just a little plug here. If you're interested in watching Roya and I build a raft, you can check out her Twitch channel, twitch.tv/RoyaRampage, where sometimes we play the game Raft and chat obscenities at a shark I call Lou Burger.
We call Lou Burger, comrade.
But Lester, with his new raft, hires a tugboat, a Jamaican tugboat, to pull his raft out to sea about 6 to 8 miles off the coast of Jamaica in international waters. There were some conflicting accounts. Some of the things I saw said 6 miles, some said eight, so I just said between 6 and 8. I don't know what it is. The thing about Lester is that Ernest is very well documented because he was super famous. Lester was not super famous, and we know almost nothing. So he anchored the raft on a sandbar with the engine block. Bada bing, I got an island. And so on July 4th, 1964, Lester claimed half of his 240-square-foot raft island as the brand new country of New Atlantis, and the other half was claimed for the United States under the Guano Islands Act.
Okay.
Yeah. You familiar with the Guano Islands Act?
No, but I think I would be... I mean, I guess at the time, guano was worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I'm like, why would... On the batshit islands.
Yeah. So welcome to Baloney, a micro podcast within the podcast, where I'm going to tell you about the Guano Islands Act. Before synthetic fertilizers were becoming commercially produced, guano was the best shit you could get, literally. In this case, from birds, not bats. There was this huge part of like what would trigger several conflicts, fighting for the rights of occupation and exploitation, particularly in South America and along the Caribbean and the Polynesian Islands. One of these resources that people were fighting for was guano, obviously, because, like you said, people were literally batshit. And seabirds produced a lot of very rich fertilizer, especially in places without human occupation or with little human occupation. And then the birds could flourish there. So in 1856, U.S. Congress passed the Guano Islands Act, which essentially encouraged American citizens to go out and do a little imperialism as a treat.
As if we ever needed a reason to do a little imperialism.
Quote, whenever any citizen of the United States discovers a deposit of guano on any island, rock, or key, not within the lawful jurisdiction of any other government and not occupied by the citizens of any other government, and takes peaceable possession thereof and occupies the same such island, rock, key, or key may, at the discretion of the president, be considered as appertaining to the United States. Meaning, if you find guano, that shit's yours, but half of it's ours.
Sounds like the U.S. government.
So 94 atolls, islands, cays, and rocks were claimed by the United States. Some of the claims ended up being withdrawn, while others became territories, which is how the United States claimed its first piece of the Kingdom of Hawaii.
Womp womp.
Yeah. And the discoverer of such a spot is required to notify the Department of State of the possession of of this place and to provide proof that all the conditions are met. If they die before the paperwork and proof is taken care of, then the widow or heirs can follow through and get the credit for the discovery, as well as the rights to live there. This is their declared land, and to harvest and sell the guano with shipments protected by the U.S. And yes, I said is, not was, because guess what? This federal law is still on the books. You can still steal land as long as there's guano. And so, over 100 years
and
after...
And it's not occupied by another government.
By another recognized government. Because the Kingdom of Hawaii was definitely a government, but we didn't recognize it as a government because those are brown people.
Yeah, but I'm saying that now it would be a lot harder.
Yes, it would be a lot harder now. So, again, over 100 years later, after this law was put into effect, Lester Hemingway was forming his own constitutional republic. Hell yeah. The quote island ended up being smaller than Lester had planned, but there are plans to expand it in the future. Don't you worry. So here's a question for you. Do you think a raft is an island?
Is there guano on it?
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
I said, is there guano on it?
But there's a bag of guano. He brought it with him.
I mean, guano doesn't make an island,
though.
I wouldn't consider it an island. But there's rocks. Oh my god, there's rocks on the raft.
The rocks are there for a reason, which we will get into momentarily.
I could see with the necessary, with the things that he brought with him, that he might could make a island out of a raft. It would actually be an island. It's not actually an island, but...
Why don't you think it's an island?
Because it's not land.
Did you know? Fun fact. There are floating islands that exist in nature.
Yeah, but it's not land.
Bamboo should be land. Also, there so I found out there's also a lot of man-made islands. The entirety of the fucking Hong Kong airport is a man-made island that I had no idea about.
Oh yeah, there's tons of them. I mean, they make them in UAE all the time outside of Dubai. And there's a bunch in
the Maldives. They were like talking about doing a whole floating city.
Yeah, in Panama too. There's man-made islands. Maldives. I think it's Maldives. I could be wrong.
So yeah. I'm sure you're wondering. Not a real island. Not real deposits of guano. Does the U.S. accept this claim?
Yeah.
Of course they do. Yes.
That wasn't the question. The question was, is it an island? Not, does the U.S. want a share of that guano?
That guano that he probably bought from the U.S. and then took out in the middle of the fucking ocean.
Yeah.
So he wrote the Constitution. Because yes, he wrote a Constitution. With his typewriter on his raft and copied the U.S. Constitution almost verbatim, only with New Atlantis written where United States was written. There were like a couple changes that were like super dated, like, I don't know, owning people. But yeah, so he starts putting out press releases claiming that, you know, we're a peaceful nation. We have no intention of threatening our neighbors. And in an interview with the Washington Post, Hemingway asserted, there's no law that says you can't start your own country. All right, Lester. So 7 months after the establishment of New Atlantis, guess what? They have their first election.
Oh my god.
In which Lester shockingly unanimously voted as president.
Yeah, I mean, is there other people on the raft or is it just him?
Well, we'll get there. Because okay. I want to tell you first how much press coverage there was about this. He made front page news in Jamaica. And
He's just this crazy white dude on a raft.
In case you are wondering, as far as I could tell, there's no indication that Jamaica was like upset. They're just like, all right. But Lester had some great goals for New Atlantis, which I think was probably part of why they were okay with it. We'll get there in a minute. But in September 1964, a spokesperson from the Jamaican embassy described Lester to the New York Herald Tribune as, quote, decent, well-meaning soul. He's a decent, well-meaning soul. So you're asking, who's voting? Well, the residents of New Atlantis, of course.
Well, yeah. Naturally. Who does that include?
Lester Hemingway, of course, has a vote. His wife, First Lady Doris, their two daughters were also there, Lady Anne Hemingway and Lady Hillary Hemingway. Lester had also brought his PR specialist, Edward K. Moss.
Raft than I thought it was.
No, it is not. Edward's assistant, Julia Cellini. There are six people on this raft, and it is not a big raft. So Doris created the New Atlantis flag, a blue field with a gold triangle and a blue circle inside. So it kind of looks like a Ouija planchette. One article mentioned that Doris actually had to make three flags in total because they kept being stolen by local fishermen. At one point, Lester wrote a letter to the president of the United States, Lyndon B. Johnson, telling him that he and his family were honorary members of the Order of the Golden Sand, giving them titles in New Atlantis. Best part? Johnson wrote back, starting his letter with, Dear President of New Atlantis. So he's like legit acknowledging this guy.
He's got a claim on it.
He's got poop. Lester set up P.O. boxes. He's issuing a national currency, which I love. It's called the Scruple. And if you are unfamiliar with what a scruple is, listener, a scruple is, according to Google, a feeling of doubt or hesitation with regard to the morality or propriety of a course of action. To justify his naming of his currency, Lester was quoted as having said, "The rich should have many scruples." Ba-dance. So, would you like to take a guess at what scruples looked like?
Oh, God. Can I get a material?
Miscellaneous?
So are they shells?
They are shark teeth, fish hooks, and carob beans.
I mean,
which are Mediterranean. So why he has them, other than the fact that it sounds like carabine, I have no clue, man.
There's just like, please trade with us. What are you offering?
I got teeth, some shark teeth,
hooks, and foreign seeds.
Yes. So according to Surviving the American Tropics, a smaller shark tooth was only half a scruple, whereas drilling a hole through a carob bean would yield you a 100th of a scruple, which was equivalent to 2 centes. Yes, centes. But he couldn't pay his bills in scruples, so he was often out trying to find new citizens for his wrath. The Grunge article that I talked about mentions a Miami News Times report claiming that Hemingway tried to entice people in various bars by saying he would exchange titles for investments.
I mean, yeah, he's got 2 daughters that he needs to get married, right?
Eventually. Yeah, exactly. So investments and citizenships would mean expansion. And that plan, we're going to expand, remember? That plan included, and I am not shitting you, to drop rocks off the side of the raft 50 feet down to the sandbar until the raft was on land. Don't ask for the logistics, because I don't know them.
I don't think that's how that works.
I just know you would need so many fucking rocks. And the goal was for New Atlantis to house the headquarters of the International Marine Research Society with the mission to further marine research, raise funds for this research, and to build a scientifically valuable aquarium in Jamaica. He also believed that he could help protect the fishing industry in Jamaica. So he was trying to do good things. He's not just some crazy. I mean, he might be some crazy, but he wanted... Yeah.
You can be crazy and still do good things.
Yeah, look at us. But he wanted to use the sale of New Atlantis stamps to help fund this research. And so stamps were printed in 1964 and 1965 that featured 5 different denominations. Two of them, the first one was like for 100 centes. There was a stamp that honored President Lyndon B. Johnson as the, quote, protector of the entire free world. It's like, this dude wrote me a letter. I'm gonna give him a stamp. And the 40 centes stamp honored the U.S. 4th Infantry Division, which Ernest had been a part of in World War II. Unfortunately, the stamp situation was not meant to be, because the United Nations agency known as the Universal Postal Union would not recognize the legitimacy of New Atlantis or the stamps that it was producing, so they were virtually unusable. Unless you were mailing to somebody on New Atlantis, presumably. Hey, you're 8 feet away. Here's a letter. So, soon, no amount of stamps or scruples were going to be a problem, because hurricane season was approaching. And in 1966, a storm untethered the island from its engine block and sent it drifting out to sea. No one was hurt or lost, thankfully. They did leave the raft before the storm. But New Atlantis was no more. The Miami News Times reported that even up until 1980, Lester continued to tell people he still had a nation that still existed, speculating that New Atlantis was, quote, probably floating somewhere near Haiti. Lester went back to writing, working freelance on various periodicals, and even started publishing a fishing newsletter called the Bimini Out Islands News, per New Atlantis. He described it as the smallest newspaper in the world and said you would need 2 copies to wrap a fish. Later in his life, he had a heart attack and was diagnosed with severe type 2 diabetes. He went through several operations and was facing the possibility of losing his legs. So, in an unfortunate family tradition, on September 13th, 1982, he also died by a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Man.
But he was 67 years old, and I was, like, For me, his feels like more of a I want to die with dignity situation rather mm-hmm. than a
depression.
Yeah, like he was depressed because all this was going on, but I think he heard we're gonna have to take your legs and he said I'm dying on my own two legs. Like I'm making the call. So
yeah,
Ernest unfortunately was still the center of attention even after, or even in Lester's obituary. The New York Times wrote, Lester C. Hemingway, a writer and only brother of late American novelist and Nobel laureate Ernest Hemingway, died Monday of a self-inflicted head wound caused by a borrowed handgun at his home in Miami Beach, according to the police. They went on to add, quote, in the biography of his brother, Lester wrote, Ernest came straight out of a Midwestern Victorian era in the 90s. Ernest called his brother Duke. In recent years, Lester had grown a beard, and according to Andy Taylor, a family friend, when he walked down the street, he looked the spitting image of his brother.
Aww.
And what's really interesting to me about Lester is, like, this is a guy who is totally happy living in his brother's shadow. Like, it wasn't until after Ernest died that he's like, all right, I'm gonna do some weird shit.
Yeah. Well, and it's so, like, weird shit that I feel like his brother would have been like, you know what? Respect. Like, I wouldn't have done it, but you did it.
Yeah, you certainly did.
Didn't do a shit job at it.
I looked into the suicides among the Hemingway family just a little bit and found out it was not uncommon at all. Ernest and Lester's sister Ursula in 1966 and a grandniece, which was Ernest's granddaughter, named Margot in 1996, also died by their own hand. I think, like I said, with Lester's being more of a dying with dignity situation, but when you look into Ernest, it's mentioned that toward the end, his behavior was a lot like that of his father's, like Clarence. And there's a theory that they had hereditary hemochromatosis, which is a disorder in which the body can build up too much iron in the skin, heart, liver, pancreas, pituitary gland, and your joints. Too much iron is toxic, and the body over time with high levels of iron can damage tissues and organs and lead to mental and physical deterioration.
Oh.
Medical records were made available in 1991, which confirmed that Ernest had been diagnosed with hemochromatosis early 1961, and the condition was almost certainly not helped by his drinking. So that could have been what took out his father and his sister as well, but we do not know. Another one of Ernest's granddaughters, Mariel, says that there were up to 7 known suicides that occurred in the Hemingway family, and she believes it might be a curse. Both Anne and Hillary are still alive, and as far as I can tell, live in Florida. So, sorry about that.
That's wild.
Hillary is a writer herself, married to another writer, Jeff Lindsay, who happens to be the author of Darkly Dreaming Dexter, which is the book series that the show is based off of.
Oh.
Dexter. So despite the fact that this became a lost micronation of New Atlantis, you can still find artifacts from the, quote, island. A woman named Mary M. Hirth, a librarian for what was then called the University of Texas Humanities Research Center, took an interest in the micronation and was able to collect some of the items from Lester. In October of 1965, the center mounted a small exhibition, and those exhibition artifacts now reside in the University of Texas at Austin's Harry Ransom Center in the New Atlantis collection. It includes a letter from Lester to Mary Hirth, whom he addressed as Lady Mary. And that is a story of Lester Hemingway and the nation of New Atlantis.
I did not know where that story was going to go. It went away I was not prepared for.
He's just a weird little guy.
Yeah, just a weird little guy that became president of his own weird little nation.
Yeah, he was having a good time.
Kind of a nation.
I mean, it wasn't not a nation. They had an election.
They had a flag.
They had a flag, which you can see at the University of Texas at Austin's Ransom Center's New Atlantis collection. I tried to get a copy of the Constitution, but you have to be a student at the University of Texas to.
So if you're a student at the University of Texas and yes. You're listening to
if you could send me a copy, because I do want to know which parts he left out and which parts he fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way,
do you want to tether a raft to the bottom of the ocean and develop our own micronation?
No, I don't.
Damn. All right.
I get seasick. I would need a lot of Dramamine.
And then he'd just be useless at that point.
Yeah. I'd just be asleep.
Yeah.
I do want to let you know Lester's name is spelled like the town in England. So it's like Leicester.
Mm.
I feel like that's important for you to know.
Yeah, choices. Yeah. Choices were made.
She was an opera singer, okay?
Thanks for joining us today as we discuss the founding of New Atlantis, and now we want to hear from you. Send your stories, your questions, and your feedback to strangeandusualpodcast@gmail.com. If you're sending a story, we just ask that you put listener story in the subject line so you can sort through those a little more easily. Did you ever start a micronation?
Do you have any guano we can borrow?
Borrow? Yeah. That's one of the things that you either keep it or you don't.
Well,
like,
no,
you don't
we're
going
to give it back. They just have to pay for it through the U.S. dollars.
No, through the...
Through our scruples.
Through our scruples. And our centos.
Centus.
Centus. Sorry.
It's just cent with an E-S at the end. You can also find us on Instagram and Threads at @strange_unusual_podcast. Or on our personal accounts, Roy Rampage and Calamity Casey. You can find us on X @_strangeunusual, @CalamityCasey, and @RoyRampage. We're on Facebook. Just search for the Strange Unusual Podcast. Look for our little logo. I mentioned within the podcast that Roy is streaming on Twitch. You can find her there, twitch.tv/RoyRampage. She's got fun stuff going on over there, so go and support her and check her out. Sometimes I'm there.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm there. And as always, if you'd like, you can join us over on patreon.com/strangeunusual, where we have a... Well, we won't at this point have a poll up, but we had a poll up. We just didn't have any episodes to tell you about it. Sorry. For $2 a month, you can join us for next month's poll and access to our Discord, where we post the dankest memes and talk about, you know, ourselves being weird little guys out in the world.
Yeah.
It's a good time. There's screaming extra bonus episodes.
Screaming into the void, talking about following up on cases that we've covered that are current.
Yeah, you checking out that Chad Daybell shit? You better be. I'm going to be talking about it soon. I'm not doing four parts, okay, y'all? Not doing that again. I stopped reading for 4 months. But anyway, patreon.com/strangeunusual. If you can afford it, that would be great. If not, I understand. $2 a month is still $2 a month, and it's hard out here. So what is it? Rate, review, subscribe, all those things that you do on the internet.
Share us with your friends. Share us with your enemies. Share us with your micronation presidents.
Yeah, with the president of your micronation. And your first lady and their kids and all the people who have titles. Only the important people. It does make me wonder if the PR guy got a title.
I'm sure he did. He was probably like in the cabinet.
But not his assistant. But yeah, if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else and just let us know, because that's the only place we know where we get reviews. We will read it out loud and it just can't be gross. Basically our only option. It could be mean and say these dumb bitches don't know how to say Maldives, whatever, one of those. Dumb bitch, 5 stars.
Yeah.
And I would be like, you're right, that's super fair. But until next time, bye.